Chapter 6. Hustle. In this chapter, I talk about the value of keeping your mouth shut, my formula for good health, and how to make time when you don't have any left. Here's a question that no one has yet asked me. What is the one tangible thing people can do to change the direction of their lives? Hustle. Anyone who follows sports, especially drafts, knows that a less gifted competitor can outplay the most naturally talented athlete if that competitor has more hustle. Similarly, it's hustle, not talent, that is the differentiator between entrepreneurs who succeed and those who don't. I have never seen anyone increase his or her natural talent, but I have seen people transform themselves by increasing their hustle. Of course, if you're born with a heavy dose of it woven into your DNA, you've got a terrific advantage. But the great thing about hustle is that if you're not born with it, you can get it. It's the most tangible, most easy to get entrepreneurial quality because you're in complete control of it. If you're not self-aware, you're somewhat dependent on other people being honest enough that you become cognizant of your strengths and weaknesses. I'm not even sure it's possible to teach yourself to be more intuitive. But if you want to turn up the hustle, you just have to spend more time doing whatever it is that takes you where you want to go. You just have to be willing to do more than the competition. And you have to do it every single day. It's like career calisthenics, something people can directly apply to their work lives and see results. It doesn't guarantee you will succeed. Plenty of hardworking people don't, but it will guarantee that you won't ever torture yourself with thoughts of should've, would've, could've. Because you'll know without a doubt that you put your heart and soul and sweat all in. I'm self-aware enough to know that I have a lot of talent, but it's my work ethic, my hustle, that has been a substantial backbone to my success. I truly know I will outwork anyone. How about you? You can be a phenomenal content creator, but if you lack passion or willingness to sweat, there is someone else out there who is going to make more opportunities for herself and more money than you. Don't let that happen. Put down Clash of Clans, binge watch Game of Thrones or Walking Dead next year, and get to work.
Hi, I'm Tom Ferry, CEO of the number one training and business coaching company in the real estate industry, and I'm excited to ask Gary the next 10 questions. How do you define hustle?
Tom, thanks for doing this, brother. You're a hustler for sure. You know, I define hustle differently every time, so we'll see what comes out of here, because the truth is it's kind of like, it's like oxygen. It's like this huge, it's like God. It's like huge for me. It's maximizing every single minute. It's the passion in your heart. It's fighting through when it hurts so much. It's an energy in your stomach that doesn't allow you to fail. It's, you know what it's kind of like? It's like Rocky Balboa. It's like a Rocky movie, right? Like, even if Drago or Mr. T punched you 8,000 times in a row in your face, you still are just going. It's the extra mile, the extra effort. It's the energy that completely is infectious around everyone around you because they can just tell you're squeezing harder, you're running faster, and you're doing it for longer than everybody around you.
Is hustle something that can be taught?
Remember, hustle allows you to pounce on every opportunity. It allows you to work towards gaining true exposure, which can allow incredible business results. And it allows you to create one more great piece of content when everybody else is sleeping. Hustle allows you to work on 5 hours of sleep instead of 6. It allows you to make one more business meeting at 11:30 at night. It allows you to bring more value to somebody else that they now feel guilty and they want to provide you value the next time. It's all of that. I think that watching my parents work their faces off, my dad, my mom at home raising 3 kids, no help, no babysitters ever, no cleaning, nothing, no help, absolutely instilled it in me. And more importantly, the reason I can emphatically say yes, and I know that if you've been listening, I hedge a lot because there's a lot to be hedged in the world. I've watched every employee that's been close to my center, all my direct reports, all my assistants, all my trainees, the people I've mentored, become stronger hustlers by watching my behavior. I don't know if it becomes a guilt that I'm working 16 hours a day and they don't think they can get away with six. I don't know if they see the fruits of it. I don't know if they realize, oh my God, it actually does take that. I'm not sure. But to answer it directly, 100% hustle can be taught. That is something I absolutely know to be true.
What's your number one piece of advice for marketing a lean, local, city-based social startup?
Oh, I remember this one because there's something Tom left off that really got me going, which was, in addition to that, it said that still undeveloped. And that got me going. What got me going here was this. My number one advice was, don't worry about your marketing plan when you haven't even built the product. Like, figuring out how to sell Nike sneakers before you even invented the Nike sneaker makes no goddamn sense. So, why don't you focus? And this is what happens. I've literally had kids come to me and say, Gary, what should I do with my millions of dollars once I make them? How should I invest it? And I'm like, are you goddamn serious? You haven't made a dollar yet. And that becomes just not practical and really lacks any sensibility. So my number one advice is, first of all, build the product, because as you build the product, you might learn something about the product that may change the way you market it. To come up with a marketing plan for something that doesn't exist yet lacks the knowledge of how to build an actual business, which is one step at a time.
What is your advice for small business owners with a limited budget? Is it local listings, SEO, writing content, social media?
Sure. and so that's the funny part to this answer. The answer is so many things, right? Create content, start a YouTube show, go to networking events in town, do social media. Like, these kind of questions bother me because I think people know the answers. The tactics are out there. There's so many established things. I think the thing that bothers me is just go and do it, right? This is really a irritating question. I mean, Google AdWords, it works. Banner ads, it works a little bit. Email marketing, it works. Facebook, it works. Instagram, it works. Going to networking events to sell chocolate because you're a chocolate store, it works. I think the real answer is just to work more, right? That's my biggest advice, because I feel like it's something you can control. But to rattle off local listings and SEO and writing content and social media, means that you know. And limited budgets means that you just do less of it for things that cost money, but you could be doing more of it, and which means you have to sacrifice. Look, you either have money or you have time and talent. You have to sacrifice time and talent when you don't have money. So that's what you should be doing more of. You should be doing more of this stuff and less of things that take you away from it if you want to. Again, I'm going to say it again. I said it before. If you have the audacity to live a life on your own terms, you being your own boss, you making enough money to go on vacations and have nice things and all the great things that come with a business, well, then you have to put in the work. Like, you have to give up something in the beginning.
What would you do if you were starting over and trying to get the name Gary V out there today?
I would do the same thing I actually did, which was, if you look at my career from 1998 to 2006, in that 8-year window, you can't find anything that I did publicly. No talking, no blogging, no video conference, nothing. You just can't find me because I put my head down and I executed my business, which allowed me to grow a very large business, which then allowed me to have the audacity to start talking about business and trends and theories and things of that nature. So first and foremost, I would earn my keep. I think too many people are out there are 23-year-old business life coaches, which where their entire business life is telling other people what to do, yet they've never done it. That's how they make their money. It's ludicrous. It's not practical. It's silly. And it pisses me off that so many people fall for it. So I would go out, execute, and then I would regurgitate what I learned in that decade and apply it against the current landscape. The things I learned about email marketing and Google AdWords are not relevant today anymore in detail, but the theory of open rates and click-through and how attention works with the end consumer and the psychology of mobile devices versus inboxes, those are all relevant. So I would go out and become a practitioner and execute, and then I would speak about it. And that's what I would do. I would just replicate what I did.
When you have a $1 billion potential business plan without financial resources and inventory, where do you start with funding?
Boy, does this question smell bad from afar for me. I mean, if you have a $1 billion idea, if that's so great, you should have no problem getting funded. I don't know, go to the richest uncle you have, or ask around your neighborhood to find out who's got the most money in town. Or I don't know, do what everybody else does, which is go to Silicon Valley and hang out around coffee shops and find people that invest. There's also angel.com, a huge list of every angel investor in the world. Or if your idea is so great, why don't you start a Kickstarter? Go to kickstarter.com, tell the world your idea, and let them fund it. I have a funny feeling it's not a $1 billion idea. I just do. People that have $1 billion ideas don't ask questions about how to raise money on $1 billion ideas. And this anxiety that I have right now stems from something quite simple, which is too many people are caught up in their ideas. And everybody thinks they have a $1 billion idea. And everybody has ideas. What actually builds the biggest companies in the world is the execution. And everybody running around saying, oh, I had that idea, or I have this idea, are just talking. And I hate words without action. I really do. Actions speak much louder than words. And so what I would recommend is for you to go out and either start building it so that people can see it. And I mean that on a shoestring budget, or it's very easy to get to venture capitalists. They all have websites. Email them. Tell them you have an idea. Give them a little hint of what it is. If it's a $1 billion idea, I have a funny feeling that every VC is going to be coming to you. P.S. I don't think you have a $1 billion idea.
Do you respond to posts, tweets, and messages yourself, or do you have your staff do it for you?
The one thing that I'm most proud of in my last 7 years of being a public internet figure, because I don't want to hyperbolize what I'm up to, is that every tweet, every Facebook comment, every Instagram comment, every Snapchat chat that you've gotten from my account is me. And that is something that is a minority. A lot of celebrities or people with big communities have people doing it for them. But I believe that that is not authentic. I truly do. I think you think you're talking to that person. It's not like it's Team Gary or the Ask Gary V book account. This is me, Gary. And I've put in the time and effort, and I believe that energy into the world is meaningful. And so the answer is, it's all me. It will always be me. When I make that switch, it will be obvious. And what I mean by making that switch, if I decide to do what I did with my Facebook fan page, which is turn it into a content push platform, I might not be pushing the content, but any comment and reply that has my face on it, that says that's my official account and it's me, that's me.
Do you work 7 days a week?
Depends on how you define working. In my brain, probably more than I like to admit, though that's probably the thing I'm most working on, which is shutting off so all my attention and energy is going towards my family on the weekends, vacations, things of that nature. Early on in my relationship with Lizzie, I did work a lot of 7 day weeks and things of that nature. I don't anymore. Obviously, the two little munchkins at home deserve a lot of that physical time, but I actually think this is more interesting around the mental time. I have a lot of friends who are like, yeah, I'm a great dad. I get home at 5:30 every day. And then I say, yeah, but you played 2 hours of Call of Duty as soon as you get home, and you're on the softball team, and you go out. And more importantly, when little Ricky's in the room, you're watching the Knicks game. You're really not paying attention. And so I think mental time is something that I'm hacking at, and that I am calling so many of you out. Just because you're physically there doesn't mean you're there. And that's something that we all have to be thinking about. So the answer is not anymore, because I'm really, really hacking at, you know, either Saturday and Sunday, a Saturday, and definitely on vacation time, I'm really trying to be mentally there. But it is very hard for me to turn off. This is my passion. I love my businesses. They're my third child, my fourth child. And so I struggle with that as much as anybody else. But physically, no. Mentally, no. But only just now starting to get there.
How do you avoid procrastination so well?
Mainly because I only talk about the things that I don't procrastinate around, which is business. I procrastinate a lot of things, like throwing out the trash, doing all sorts of paperwork, like anything I don't like, I procrastinate. The best way to not procrastinate is to only do things you like, because then you'll actually do them. I mean, procrastination is something I think I have a ton of. Now, the way I've been able to stop procrastinating certain things within my business, to give a little bit more value to this question, is I've surrounded myself with other people. by now having a full-time assistant, by now having a production team around my content, by having very senior financial and operation leadership and partners, I've been able to be much better because I have human infrastructure surrounding me to make sure I don't drop the ball on something that needs to get done right away.
Gary, are you a morning person?
No. And yes, let me explain. Historically, no. As many of you know, 18 months ago, I started taking care of my health, so I am a little bit more now. Getting a quick workout in at 5 or 6 or 7 a.m. is clearly helping that a little bit. But I hate this question, and I'll tell you why. I'm so mad at people that try to impose on everybody that being a morning, the early bird gets the worm. Well, what about the worms that come out at midnight? And I think that's the important part of this question, which is, it doesn't matter if you're a morning or night person. As a matter of fact, with technology now, we see a lot more people being productive 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3 in the morning. Me included. I am sharper, more productive on momentum. So at 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, I'm still rolling, and I've used the whole day's momentum to be sharp and really on. And so I would tell you that I'm not so worried about if you're a morning or night person. I'm more worried about what you're getting accomplished in the 12 or 14 hours that you're executing, or 7 or 2. So don't think about it as morning. Think about it as, what are you getting done? As the world becomes more 24 hours, as the world becomes more global, it's not necessarily that you're winning because you got up at 7 a.m. on the East Coast. Just not as practical as it used to be.
Hey everybody, I'm Jason Fried, the co-founder and CEO of Basecamp. It's an honor to read the next questions for the Ask Gary V book. Let's go. How do you deal with burnout?
Jason, first of all, thank you so much. Guys, if you don't know who Jason Fried is, Google it. He's incredible. Burnout. I actually deal with this in a very interesting way. First and foremost, I have to say, because I'm doing what I love so much, it happens infrequently. Even though I'm working a lot, I don't burn out because I think burnout comes more emotional than physical. And so the way I deal with it is actually quite weird. So stick with me. When I feel burnt out, and that means like, screw this, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to sell the business and whatever, all the, you know, kind of hyperbole that will come out of one's mouth when you're really sad and burnt out, I actually take a step back and I make pretend that my mom died in a car accident. And I know this is weird, and stick with me, but I get myself very quickly into a place where I put things into perspective. No matter how bad it is at that moment, something that happens in my real life, right, in my family life that is that tragic. And by the way, I'm smart enough to know that that happens every minute of every day to some other human being. So this isn't some crazy aliens are going to come and kill us. No, real things that are real tragedies, being diagnosed with cancer that is not curable. These are things that we all know exist. And when I take a step back and say, yes, I might have lost that piece of business, or yes, that person might have left my company, or yes, this bad thing just happened. When I put it into the context of the health and well-being of my family, it's not even close. And so I know it's a little rogue, but I got to tell you, if you're willing to try it, and if you're that in tune with your feelings that when you trick yourself into believing it, that it feels real for a second, it scares the bones out of your body, it might work for you.
What are your practical hustle hacks when it comes to sleep, diet, and your daily routine? How do you maintain energy and brain power while hustling nonstop?
First and foremost, I put myself in a position to succeed. And what I mean by that is, by doing what I love for a living, it's very easy for me to maintain that energy. And that's super important to understand. The other things are, I surround myself with people that help me succeed. I have a full-time health trainer, and it's very expensive, but I decided to spend money on that versus other luxuries, and that allows me to stay on point with my diet. He came in today while I'm reading this book. He walked right in and got me what I needed to have. And so I've hacked by using my advantages, which are thinking about the big picture, which is putting myself in a position to succeed and to be in with, then using the finances instead of another stupid watch or a car on my health, you know, and some people are like, oh, that's crazy. I think it's crazy you bought a $100,000 watch, you know, and so I focus on what's important, but it's really I'm not very good at individual micro hacks because I like to solve at the top. For example, I'd be a really bad plumber or maybe a great one. I wouldn't want to fix your sink. I'd want to go and fix the well. right? I don't like the tactical stuff. I like to get to the root of the problem. And so for me, I level up my stuff by literally things like starting another business when I needed to, because Wine Library wasn't doing it for me anymore. Like, that's a big thing, by the trainer thing that I just told you. And so my hacks are actually quite global, and then I let the chips fall where they will, because it's usually fixed by that.
You said you watch us fans of the show and can tell if people are hustling. How? Engagement, frequency, or gut?
First, work. I actually, while I'm traveling, as a matter of fact, when I leave this studio, I'll probably look at my phone, I'll look at my email to make sure there's no problems, my messages, I'll look at my social to see what you guys are saying about my stuff, and if there's any time, I'll start randomly clicking you guys and seeing what you're up to. The way I learn, and by the way, it's not because I'm such a great guy, and look, I want to be very transparent with you guys. It is not because I'm the greatest guy ever, and I love this community so much. That would be me lying. It's because by watching other people's actions, I learn a lot. And so I'll click around, and I'm not following you to learn your tactics. I'm trying to see what my words are doing to impact you. Are you actually following the tactics that I preach? I'm proud that I put out my best advice in this form at a very low cost, but if the people that follow it don't actually execute on it, am I actually doing anything of value? And that's why I do it. And so how do I do it? I usually click people that are saying things to me like, hey, I'm hustling, Gary Vee, thanks. And then I'll click and I'll see how much you're hustling. I'll see what your website looks like. I'll go to all your 7 social networks and I'll really look for like 15 minutes. I'm like, Rick's not hustling. He hasn't posted in 6 days here. And what's this? He had 10 comments from this blog post and he didn't reply to anybody. And so the real answer to the question, I guess, which is how? By putting in the work, by actually being a researcher. This is something I don't talk about a lot, which is fun. This is what an audiobook can really get out of you, right? By being a researcher. I'm literally a researcher. I literally do the work, the hand-to-hand combat, you know, the dirt, to actually see what you're doing. And then that gives me another layer to my intuition around what you're doing.
We spend so much time pouring our creativity into projects for our clients that when it's time to shift gears and focus on our own brand, we're exhausted. How do you keep the fire burning for both?
This is about perspective. This is, you know, this is about a lot of things. It's about extra hard work. It's really easy to keep passion for both because the client work keeps the lights on, right? It keeps you practical. It allows you to pay your bills and live your life. And your entire livelihood is based on your income. And I'm sure those clients' income is what's driving that. The reason I can stay extra hours or have watched other people spend extra hours on the side is because you have awareness to where you want to go versus where you are right now. And you realize that if you put in those extra hours to start building something for yourself, that eventually, if that gets big enough, you can stop doing client work. It's really ironic. Jason Fried, who's reading these questions, I don't know if this was done on purpose. He had a client service business. They, a design and development firm, they built a tool to manage their stuff internally. That tool eventually became the business. And so they did that on the side while they were doing it. And so I guess the way to answer the question of burning from both sides is because you need and want both. You need the money in the short term to be practical and live life, and you need the North Star to know that you're not going to just have a client service business your whole life, and you're not going to be in the rat wheel the whole life, and that you're going to be able to have something else that builds a bigger, more substantial, maybe better lifestyle business.
I'd love to hear more on how to hustle faster.
Take shorter meetings. First and foremost, I'm telling you right now, every one of you is taking a 1 hour or a 30-minute meeting. That could be a 30-minute or a 15-minute meeting. I'm down to 4-minute meetings, just as an FYI. The other thing is stop focusing on dumb shit. And dumb shit is defined as things that you can't control. Hours in a day, debating and pondering and posturing around stuff you can't control. Don't be afraid to break things. One of the best ways to make stuff work better is to break a process you already have. I do this a ton at VaynerMedia. We change rules all the time to the frustration of many, but then when some of it works, they get really excited. Stop being romantic. When you start believing in your own hype, you tend to get slower. You kind of think you made it, and that hurts. don't take time to breathe. And I know this is weird and this sounds completely wrong, but I'm stunned how many people just want to stop. You know, just like, let's go get a beer at the pub. Just like these breaks, these 15-minute YouTube video sessions in the middle of every day, 17 times a day, or shooting the shit around the water cooler, or, I mean, I don't know. That to me is just unacceptable. Perfection. I fucking hate perfection. It slows you down. By trying to make something perfect, you work on it forever. And what's perfection? It's eye of the beholder, my friends. And more than anything, it's kind of like maybe these new workout regimens, right? That they just keep you moving at all times. That's something I'm good at. As a matter of fact, I'm freaking out in this booth right now because I'm not moving. I'm moving my hands. It's keeping the guys entertained. But like, you know, like just keep moving, like moving. I started Daily V, my video blog, my daily vlog, just to show you it's moving. I think all those things are really nice, tangible advices. I hope you re-listen to this one. This one had something in it. Just think about listening to it again because speed kills in sports and in business.
Do you ever get sick? And if so, how do you still hustle through it?
I used to get sick and I didn't hustle through it. Let me tell everybody here, like, listen, I want you guys to live forever. I'm into hustling, but if you're sick, like, drink tea, relax, watch some TV. Like, by the way, secretly, I want to get sick because I'd love to have a random day off just once in a while. It'd be interesting. Like, what do they even show on daytime TV anymore? Netflix? That'd be cool. Like, are there good things there? I haven't gotten sick in 6 years, and I'm scared to tell you why, but I'm gonna go there, and this is the part of the book where you're gonna laugh. 6 years ago, on a flight, after reading an article about how underrated the brain is and how little we know about the brain, I decided to tell myself that I'd never get sick again, and I haven't gotten sick. Now look, I know a lot of people are like, what the hell, where is this guy going? Let me add a couple variables. In those 6 years, I went from taking 3 to 4 flights a year to 100. In those 6 years, another thing didn't change, which is I do not wash my hands. And when I say I don't wash my hands, I don't wash my hands a lot. Like, it's just true. I just don't wash my hands that much. And by the way, this is in lieu of the last 18 months of me getting healthy. So go back 6 years to 18 months ago. In that 3.5-4 year window, I got older. I got into worse shape. I flew a billion times. I did not wash my hands. And the only thing that changed from me getting sick 3 to 6 times a year to 0 was I told my brain that I want my brain to overpower my sickness for the rest of my life. I don't know what else to say. That was the weirdest part of the book. I have a funny feeling I'm going to be tweeted about this. I'm looking forward for the Zen medicine people telling me, yeah, Gary, it's true. You can do that. I would just end with, if you're sick, listen to your body. You know, it's just smart. I do go to sleep for 10 hours a day, sometimes out of nowhere, something I don't talk a lot about, because that's me listening to my body. And so don't try to be a hero. You end up being sick for 4 months. Like the wonderful team here has helped me early on in this book, going faster when I'm reading is actually going to make me slower. And so sometimes you need to get your patience down. You need to listen to yourself. So listen to your body.
Is it possible to hustle the way you do anywhere outside the United States?
You know, I'm sensing a theme here that I actually didn't realize when I was doing the show, which is people are just looking for permission for an excuse to why they're not winning. You know, is anybody else, as you've been listening for a good chunk now, realizing that everybody's looking for me and other people to give them permission to not do, to not work? This is insane. Of course it's possible. It happens every day. Entrepreneurship is not relegated to the United States of America. There's amazing entrepreneurship going around in the entire world. Now, similar to the last question, as someone who was born in the Soviet Union, do I think it's as easy to be a freewheeling entrepreneur when a government is watching all your steps and in a communist country or a dictatorship? Of course not. However, there is enormous entrepreneurship throughout the entire world, and please stop looking for excuses.
This is John Legend. I'm a singer, songwriter, producer, entrepreneur, philanthropist. Few questions for you, Gary. What's the biggest butt you hear from others that holds them back? What is your butt, and how do you get off of it?
Butt is a really tough word for me. As you guys know, I'm not into the excuse business. I am visceral to the word. I hear it all the time. Gary, our company would have won, but, you know, Gary, my company would be off the ground, but, Gary, the culture would be better, but. So I'm not a big fan of this. However, I want to take this in a certain direction because I do think it's an important thing that a lot of people in my position and a lot of my contemporaries are making a huge mistake in. I think it is naive and audacious to believe that me being a white male in America isn't an advantage. I think a lot of people dwell on their disadvantages, whether they are female entrepreneurs, and I have a lot of homies like that. I invest in a ton of that. Minorities, you know, disabilities. These are all real things. I think that I don't want to sit here and say the cliche thing that everybody does, which is like, forget buts, there's no excuses, just do it. I think it's insane to not recognize that there are absolutely things that are set when you are born that may not create an easy path to massive success. And let's not forget about you were born rich and you're a white boy. And then your parents die in a private plane accident. That's also a but, right? I mean, there's a million ways to look at this. As a matter of fact, what about all the rich kids that are born that decide they don't want to climb that mountain and they become losers because they can't deal with the pressure of trying to live up to their mom's billion-dollar business? So, look, there's always buts, but it comes down to how you want to look at it. Here's what I would say. Don't take me, because yes, I was born in a foreign country. Yes, I didn't start with a whole lot, but I've got a lot of advantages going for me. Let's look at other people. If there is one person that came from the ghetto, that came from nothing, that came from drug parents, if there's one human being that exists that came from all odds to win, oh, by the way, let me help you here. There are thousands. There are tens of thousands. There are hundreds of thousands of them. Then you can do that too. Those were people that saw adversity and realized there was an amazing legendary story, a movie to be made about their lives, instead of what so many people do, which decide to look at it as, I'll never make it because. And so my but, by the way, and I'm going to answer this very real, I don't have a but right now. You know why? I'm still executing. While I'm on the field, I don't need to say what I didn't get off in my career. I'm still in the game. And I promise you, at 79 or 84 years old or 92, like every other human being, I will come up with a but. When I don't buy the New York Jets, I'll come up with a but. I was too nice. I gave away too much of my content for free. I should have asked for more in my prime, in my 30s and 40s. Trust me, I've already got my buts figured out when I'm 80, but right now I don't have one. And like everybody else, I'm human, but right now I'm an optimist. I choose to see all the good things instead of the bad, and way too many of you are going the other route. So take a step back, rethink this one, and attack it.
Isn't working long hours an old school mindset? Why not focus on building wealth via passive income?
It depends how you define passive income. Right now, the slang term passive income, especially in the internet age, is a whole lot of pyramid scheme, kind of, you know, these landing page optimization, you know, all these characters that take pictures of themselves smoking weed on the beach in Jamaica with chicks all around them and saying, I made it by my secret plan and you could do it too, and it's $10,000 a month. It's insane. Now, if you call passive income the way that it's been as an old school mindset, that's right, I'm digging at you. You mean, you know, taking your money and investing in real estate because real estate never goes away. Very conservative stocks and bonds that are tied into the health of the American government. You know, like if America goes away, that's the only way you lose. Sure, passive income is great, but to think that working long hours is not a cost of entry for success because you actually had to work those long hours to amass the wealth to put into these passive things, then that's a naive mistake. So look, I'm not sure the context of the question. My intuition is, because I have a lot of fans that are like this, that are bought into this passive, I'm going to figure out some crazy algorithm that's going to make me tons of money, and I'm just going to wake up every morning and refresh my bank account, and it's going to be amazing. My PayPal's blowing up. You know, I just don't think that that's as real as people think. And for the one or two people that actually pull it off, which, oh, by the way, are MIT math skilled based nerds that have never taken an Instagram photo with $100,000 in cash on the bed, for every one of those two and three, there's 100 million posers selling this bullshit.
What athlete, past or present, embodies hustle for you?
You know, I don't think anybody's going to be surprised that this is a New York Jet. His name is Wayne Krebet. He's about as tall as I am, which is just insanity. And he went to Hofstra and had absolutely no shot of being on a football team, was was easily not drafted by the NFL, and his dad, and this is a Jersey boy, which makes it so much more fun for me, his dad sent VHS tapes to every single coach in the league. Now, this was during a very dark time in New York Jets history. This was when we were 1-15 and 2-3-13, and Rich Kotite, who drove us to that bottom place, actually did one good thing, and that was watch that film and decide to give him a shot. And though Wayne came in as the 11th guy in the depth chart, and people thought he'd be gone by the second day of camp, slowly but surely, especially because we surely didn't have a lot of talent, he ticked away and climbed up the depth chart and eventually became a starter in his rookie year and had a tremendous Jets Hall of Fame career. I was there a year ago when his name was put in the Ring of Honor, which was just incredible. He's an incredible story. Against all adversity, made the team and then had a 10-plus year career, just a grinder through sheer will, clearly had talent like we all do. But if you want to talk about hustle, if you want to talk about really putting in the work, and then you want to talk about somebody who said, oh, I didn't get drafted, let me become a milkman. Or, listen, Wayne's a smart guy, he's now on Wall Street, like, oh, I didn't get drafted, but my dream and passion is to play in the NFL, so I'm going to try for the next couple of years to do that versus getting a nice job on Wall Street. That's what he did, and he figured out how to do it. Remember I talk about asking? He asked. They made a film, and they sent it to everybody. And by the way, everybody said no, except one person.
It's done one again. Sick of me yet? Got another question for you. How do I get a job working for you?
First of all, I want to say to everybody who's listening to this, this is my favorite question I get, and I get it on email probably 50 to 100 times a week, and I still stay so flattered when people actually send me this. So thank you. Keep them coming. I'm flattered. It's fun right now. I'm recording this, and I'm watching D-Rock right now record me on Facebook Live, and obviously he's my go-to answer for this right now. He reached out to me, wants to do spec work. You've heard the story already in this audiobook, and so I won't rehash it. But he asked. Ironically, this is following up the Wayne question. Seems like somebody did a good job organizing these questions. Wayne asked 32 people to give him a shot. One did, right? And then I think about my friend Kevin Rose, who I already mentioned once as well, but he comes top of mind because Square just went public, and he made a lot of money. And guess what? He asked Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Square, to invest multiple times. And you know what the answer was? No. So you know what he did? He made a video of why Square was going to be phenomenal. He had a big audience on Twitter at the time. He posted a blog post, and tons of people saw it and started talking about it. And he basically guilted Jack Dorsey into allowing Kevin to invest into Square, and he won. These are all people who didn't take no for an answer. I'm not quite sure, and I'm not going to ask him to shake his head right now because I don't want to slow down the process, but I have a funny feeling that wasn't the first time D-Rock asked me. There we go. It was not the first time he asked me to do a film, but I'm busy, and I said no by not answering, and that one day I did answer. So it's tenacity is how you actually end up working for me, but you may not have the skills. There's been people who've tried 17 times. I then, on the 18th time, gave them an interview at Vayner, and the machine, my process, what I put in place, said that person wasn't good enough, and that was sad for me. I wanted them to win. I'm cheering for that person, but we're not in the charity business. Talent matters, and I don't think any of you want charity, because, great, you work for me for 3 months, and then you get fired. I mean, so, nonetheless, I think it comes down to understanding no is just a moment in time before a yes.
How do you balance speed and hustle with patience?
This is a great question. In general, I contradict a lot of things. I pull in opposite directions. I think my autobiography, when I read it one day, is going to be called The Bridge, because I think I'm pulling from opposite directions, and I always try to find that middle. But I actually been able to figure this out a little bit more since I first had it on the show, and that's why this is so fun. I'm fast in the dirt, in the day-to-day. In the moment, but I'm very slow, I'm very patient in the global. Here's a good one. I'd be very patient in building my religion, but I'd be very fast in building the churches and temples, right? Like, it's just clouds and dirt, actually. I mean, that's what it is. We've talked about it earlier. I balance it by recognizing once I make a decision, and this is my North Star, now I've got to go fast, but I'm very calculated, very thoughtful, and I also value the things in patience, which is being a good person, which oftentimes doesn't allow you to cash in quickly. You know, building real relationships, bringing real value. These are things that happen over 30, 40, 60 years. You know, your best friend in the world, yeah, maybe you knew right away, but you became best friends over a period of time. So for me, it actually just makes perfect sense. It's actually crystal clear. You've got to balance both. I think a lot of people, I think most people are not successful because they reverse it. They make quick, rash decisions. They don't think about the second or third or fourth chess move once they do it. And then after they make a decision, I'm going to start a t-shirt company. Well, then they're slow in execution. And so I actually think myself, you know, if you think of those pie charts, those box charts, I think I'm really in that top right corner. And I think a lot of people are in that bottom left hand corner because they're not executing the way I see it. They're executing in reverse, quick to make a judgment. They're going to jump on the next fad. I'm going to build an app for the iPhone, right? Great. And then they don't actually do anything, which is really interesting to me because I try to be very thoughtful about what I do next and where I'm going, my finish line. But then my actions within it are quite fast because once you're on the field, boy, you got to go fast.
How can you claim to be family first but work 19 hours a day? How can you be a good dad and husband and rarely be home?
Let me paint you a picture. You work 9 to 5 and you come home and you drink a bunch of alcohol and you punch holes in the wall and abuse your kids mentally. You've been there a lot of hours. Are you a great dad because you did that? A great mom? Absolutely not. Let me tell you why this question comes up so much. My wife Lizzie and I have made a huge decision to not exploit our children on social media. I think a lot of my friends use kid pics to get likes and it makes them feel good. Or they're proud of their kids. And by the way, I said it earlier, I'm not going to judge anybody's parenting. But for us, we're not showing our kids to the world. If they want to start a YouTube channel when they're 8, and Misha, I know you do, then they'll do their thing. But we've made that their decision, not our decision. And so because I don't story tell or show you the time I spend with them, and I'm only showing you waking up at 6 and working out and being in a meeting at 11:30 and coming home, and you didn't see, for example, today. This is great, actually. Today, from 8 to 10:30, I was at Misha's school, recital, a little play in her classroom. There was no Snapchat story. There's no D-Rock there filming it. And so you don't know. And I get it. And so I get that. On the flip side, I'm not trying to trick anybody. I am working 19 hours a day. I am working a lot more and spending less time at home than probably 97% of the people listening to this right now. The reason I feel good is what I'm doing with them when I'm actually with them. Tomorrow, on a Saturday, I'm going to be all in. When I say all in, I mean no phone, you know, yeah, maybe a second here and there for a Snapchat story because I'm hot on it right now, but literally 97.9, 98.2% of my attention, not my hours, is going to be on them. We're going to spend time together. I'm going to listen. And listen, I'm taking 7 weeks vacation a year now. When you start adding up those hours, it adds up. Still not as much as you. I get it. I also know that everybody has to do what's right for them. I also know that a lot of the things that I'm establishing right now are going to create amazing things for my children. My work and my dad's work has created in 2 generations a scenario where Misha's going to her first Knicks game this upcoming Monday with me. This is not me giving her the tickets with her friend. Me, Misha, and I are going Monday to a Knicks game. We'll spend 6 hours together, and it's going to be courtside. And I'm not trying to be fancy. I love sitting in nosebleeds, but like, let me tell you something. When I was 7, I wish I went courtside too. Like, it comes down to a lot of things. It's all a balance. Nobody has it perfect. I think I claim family first because right now, in the middle of recording this book, if Justin, my brother-in-law, got sick, I would be by his side, and I don't care how much money I lost and this and that. And so look, people are judging on the dirt instead of the clouds on these things. You're looking at the hours. I'm thinking about the time in, the heart, the soul. And let's remember something else. My kids are 3 and 6. Let's talk about all the great things that people did from 0 to 11 with their children, but then screwed them up because they misparented from 11 on or were bad people or did bad things. Like, this is a marathon. I'm in the first inning of being a parent. I got plenty of time. Some of you were great as parents when you did all your kids' homework and you thought everything was so great and you created a fake environment for them and gave them a trophy for everything and now they can't function in the real world. So I'm not judging anybody and I appreciate nobody judging me either. Here's what you need to know. I love my family way more than I love my businesses. I'm just fortunate enough that I haven't had to prove it to you just yet. And I hope I never have to.